This is a podcast from ABC Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. It happened to me this week. A young person, probably a millennial, shut me down with a wave of my hand and a dismissive, "Okay, boomer." It's become the term of the moment. A way in just a couple of words of the younger generation letting the older generation know that their time has come and gone. They no longer should have a say in what's happening in the world now and into the future. During the 1960s and 70s, baby boomers stamped their mark on the world. They grew into adulthood alongside the rise of the Beatles, miniskirts and long hair on men. They created the internet, lost interest in religion, opposed various wars and were far less conservative than their parents. In Australia, they enjoyed free university and cheaper housing prices, but also very high interest rates and a changing workplace and constant change in technology and politics. They went to school during a time of major change in syllabus and teaching methods. Baby boomers more recently have been heard condemning the current Gen Z and millennials, many of whom are their own children, as irresponsible, hysterical, and lazy. These younger generations are condemning boomers for everything from not being able to buy a home to the current climate crisis. To sort out what boomers ever did for us, social researcher Mark McCrindle is our guest, always a welcome guest on Overnights. He's an award-winning social researcher, demographer, best-selling author, TEDx speaker and founder of McCrindle Research. Mark, good morning.
Good morning, Rod.
Let's start with what a boomer is. I know it's been kind of described as between 1946 and 1964, but some of those boomers were kind of born before 46, and my feeling is it kind of ended before 64, surely.
Yes, the years can be a bit blurry. Essentially, we're talking about the generation that was part of this post-war baby boom, which did begin in Australia a little bit before the official end of the war. So you might even say 43, 1944, that sort of year. And certainly by the time we were approaching the mid-1960s, there was a sense that the generation was all complete. Some people that are closer to mid-60s, born maybe 63, 64, so they don't feel like they're part of that baby boom era because the 1960s was not something that they remember. So definitely there's a bit of debate around the years, but roughly those that were part of that post-war baby boom and were shaped earliest memories in the 1960s.
So what advantages did the boomers have? If they're born in that era, throughout the 1950s, what advantages did boomers have that perhaps people who are coming of age now don't have?
Well, they've had a half-century economic miracle for a start. They've seen that they could get into property. It was the start of the housing boom as well. So many booms began as part of this demographic boom. We saw a lot of developments, new suburbs roll out, and the supply of housing really was there to match them as they hit their 20s. And a single income would do it. So they were able to get into property on a single income and see that asset appreciate massively. They did have strong employment because they created their own demand as a demographic. Back as they were beginning to be born, the population was around 10 million people, in fact, a little bit under that, and you add to that population another 5 million in this baby boom, and you can see that they created their own demographic, and so that led to economic strength, property opportunities, employment growth. They moved into leadership quite quickly because there was the need for more leaders in the workplace. They could rise up the ranks quite quickly. And a lot of social reforms as well. So they really were born and shaped in a truly unique time in our history.
Many lost money, though, in the global financial crisis, didn't they? So maybe some of the economic advantages you've talked about were wiped out.
Well, that's true, and as it comes time for them to think about retirement, certainly the older of them, keep in mind they're approaching they're into their 70s now, at that oldest age. So, you know, a decade ago, many were starting to plan for retirement, and that was all upset with the financial crisis, with superannuation performance still a little, and had to alter those retirement plans, maybe the manner of their retirement that they had pictured, maybe the timing of it. So it's not that they've had it all their own way, and you know, it was harder or not the mainstream thing to get a degree for them compared to their children, even though many of them were capable and could have.
Yeah.
Less than one in five has a degree. Today, it's more than a third. You know, the technology was not as phenomenal as they have. They had to do it the hard way in so many ways with their studies, handwriting, and you couldn't access the internet, of course, and things were a lot more manual even around employment in their era. So it's not to say they had it perfect, but certainly economically in their formative years, they had a good run.
They had to live through some recessions, though, some pretty serious recessions, and an oil crisis as well in the 1970s that really was the beginning of the modern world, that people had cheap petrol for decades, and all of a sudden that disappeared.
That's true. That oil crisis and the recession of 1991, and perhaps even in between those two times, or around that certainly the first time, was the Vietnam War, which helped this generation phenomenally. Through the particularly the late 1960s, even into the early 1970s, right at the time that they were hitting the age of conscription. So, you know, socially and politically, there were some great ructions, and that shook a little bit of their faith in institutions, in government, and in leadership. You know, they saw that war become a quagmire and become something quite tragic. So, and there has not been a war of that scale. There certainly hasn't been conscription since that era. They brought about social reforms because they had to, because it was literally their lives and their futures and their conscription on the line. So those tough times that they did live through, the recessions and the like, actually helped shape them. And rather than something that they pulled back from, now they say, well, that was the making of us and caused us to step up as young people and take charge of our futures a little bit. So yeah, certainly not a smooth run by any means, and even the tough times helped shape the fortitude that we've seen with them, that work ethic, that maturity earlier on, and getting on and getting it done.
So why do you think it is then that those who were shaped by the Vietnam War and their opposition to it might be opposed to the protests that are going on today, young people in particular, about climate change? They're exactly the same age as those who were protesting against the Vietnam War.
That's right. This was the original protest generation, these baby boomers. And it wasn't just the war. It was civil rights. It was various reforms that got them out onto the streets. At the same age, you're right. It's partly that, you know, every generation imagines itself to be the pinnacle, and everyone coming after is a bit lazier or not as wise. It's also partly that they felt that they paved the way, and they haven't perhaps received the recognition for that. They feel that they were nation-shaping in those protests, and history would say they were pretty phenomenal protests globally. The protests around civil rights, the protests that were anti-conscription, were probably at a higher level in terms of the reforms than some of the protests around, you know, giving young people a voice. Although, you know, climate change is up there as a big issue for this generation of young people. Some of them pushing back on it, and perhaps they're pushing back a little bit on some of the methods. You know, they're saying, "Oh, this generation are a bit of a rabble rousing ones, gluing themselves to pavements in a climate extinction sort of climate rebellion manner." But it must be remembered that the baby boomers themselves engaged in non-traditional, you know, not just peaceful protests walking down the streets, but there were a few acts of big acts of civil disobedience as well. So maybe it's just that, you know, they feel that they were unique, history shaping times, and it's not quite the same today.
Maybe a generation that now, whether it's Generation Z or millennials, don't understand that life wasn't always like the way that it is now. That in fact, that the baby boomers, they were the ones who fought for women's rights, for example. Feminism was a huge part of the late 60s, early 70s, into the 80s, and equality, which we're still talking about now. It hasn't been achieved, but that's when it started. Gay rights as well was huge. Drug use, I mean, the sort of acceptance now, they're talking about decriminalising it in so many countries, but we're talking about Australia, that these things were not part of the agenda, the social agenda, until the boomers came along. Do you think that the millennials just simply don't understand that? And what role did the boomers have in shaping that part of our life?
Yeah, they played a massive role in transforming our society. And I think that it is not recognised as much by this younger generation, maybe, you know, which feeds the frustration of some of the older generations, that there's just not that recognition and that observation that actually at the same age, you know, this generation of boomers was transforming society. You know, in Australia, coming after 20 years of conservative government with the Menzies government, in the US, the Eisenhower government, it came to an end. And if you think about the shifts, you know, it was JFK coming to power in the early 1960s, and we had Whitlam coming to power in the early 1970s. So this was starting. We were starting to see political change and social change all around the place, and this generation were on the front row tickets to it. In fact, they were ushering much of this in. And perhaps there's a sense that contribution to history is not recognised and maybe a source of frustration. And it also has to be recognised that while, you know, sometimes younger generations will say, this generation, you know, you don't quite get this technology, you're not quite up with this new innovation. Well, actually, it's the baby boomers who ushered in the computer revolution. They were the programmers and the inventors and certainly the early consumers that have seen the foundation laid for this new era of the digital economy. In fact, the baby boomers have adjusted and adopted more new technology than any generation before them, and they continue to adapt to the new technology. And I think that also is a source of perhaps angst that it's not recognised that actually, you know, they were the original innovators of some of the technologies that we now have.
Take some calls in a moment, 1-300-800-222. They can be held responsible, though, for things that weren't done. Not just talking about work on climate, which wasn't a big deal. People talked about the hole in the ozone layer in the 1980s. It wasn't a big deal before that. What else did boomers not do?
Yeah, great point. I mean, they started lots of reforms that have been picked up since then. You know, we think about what's foundational for young people today, which is essentially universal access to university and making it possible for anyone to get there. The boomers started to see that, and it was under the Whitlam government that the university sector was opened up. Mind you, they still had to pay their own way, and we didn't see the opportunity through HECS or deferring the cost of university come through until the 1990s. So perhaps we could say that the baby boomers had aspirations for university education and opening the way for all, but it really was just something of privilege a little bit more till after their time.
If I can interrupt for a moment.
Workplace and leadership, you know, how it looks that actually the hierarchical approach, the chain of command, right, sitting at the bottom and working your way up over time, that didn't change. They started to push back on traditional leadership structures, but nonetheless, you know, the collaborative workplace that we have today, again, didn't really come through until the 1990s.
Just one of our texters says, Gough Whitlam abolished fees. Most boomers were well into or through uni by then. Not necessarily. If you're born, say, 1960, you're not going to university until about 1980, perhaps, 1979. So if you were born in 1960, 55 or so, perhaps. You're going to university around about the time Whitlam came in. So there were maybe the first 10 years of boomers missed out on free university education, but there were plenty more. The next 10, 15 years of them would have got free university. And we're talking also about mature age students and a whole range of universities, the so-called Blue Gum universities, I think, that third wave of universities are being opened at that time, so more people are going to university.
Well, exactly. In fact, the generation that went just before them now in their 80s, about 1 in 10 in that age group has a university degree. By the time we got to the mid-boomers, it was about 1 in 5. So certainly we saw that the numbers and opportunity almost double. But even that is low scale compared to what we have now, where it's the most popular option after school, even ahead of TAFE or vocational education, closer to 1 in 2. So a lot of change since then.
Cheryl says, baby boomers like myself spoilt their kids materialistically and created the generations of the ages of entitlement. I mean, that's a good point that Cheryl makes, is that, you know, you can't criticise the kids or the grandkids of today. You created them.
Yeah, that's worth keeping in mind. I mean, the baby boomers' parenting style, we now look back on it with great nostalgia because it was the free-range kid approach. It was giving the children lots of freedom, get outdoors, as long as you're back by sunset sort of thing. On Saturdays, the way they raised the kids was head out and have some fun and we'll see you at the end of the weekend sort of thing. There was a lot more freedom in terms of the way they raised their children, and they had experienced the same freedom themselves. They were into getting their kids into sport or activities, but the children had to ride the bike up to play soccer or whatever. There was a lot more responsibility placed on the children. And, we now look back at that and we see the benefits that had for the children rather than perhaps the sedentary, screen-based lives of today. But, a different parenting approach than the program-structured approach that we now have.
Trav says, as a general rule, the baby boomer generation is from the end of World War II to the introduction of the contraceptive pill. So that's a really important part. That's a defining part of what happened. They got us to the moon and back, and I don't see millennials doing that. Well, I don't know that the boomers got us to the moon and back, did they? I mean, it was mostly people born before the war that took people to the moon, surely.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, 1969, the boomers were very young, certainly the younger edge of them. So they share that part of history and feel as part of the global community, that they were there and helped make it happen. But it was the generation before that laid down that technology. But, the pill in 1961 becoming commercially available did have massive impact. In fact, apart from the social impact, it had a massive demographic impact, and that's why by the time we look at 1964, we say, look, that's the end of the baby boomers, because that's the end of the actual baby boom. Mm-hmm. By 1965, such was the impact of the pill, the birth rate in Australia had dropped to what it was in the war years, which was quite low, and so that bell curve of births was complete.
Okay. Let's take some calls. Trevor is first. Good morning, Trevor.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I'm caught in the middle. I was born in 1945, and with an elder brother who was born in 39. And I know that there's a group of people who, in that earlier age group, who benefited when television arrived in 56.
Yeah.
I was only 11. Now, as I was going through senior school, there were very few boys ahead of me who went on to university. There was only one university.
Yes.
When I left school, Monash was just about to open.
Mm-hmm.
And behind me, there was twice as many classes for each age group. So instead of two classes of 24, we had three of 36 or four of 24 coming through behind us.
Mm.
Now, the teachers were taken away and we were sent out on the oval to play while they filled in grants which were being offered by the federal government to build science labs and so on at the schools.
I certainly remember our school got one of them.
The universities expanded for them. By the time I moved to Canberra in 69, Gough Whitlam came into power and he opened up the universities for free for 3 years, and a lot of the people of that same age group gain the benefit.
Right.
I just seem to fall through the crack between the two. My brother's age group, the older ones, and the and well, these younger ones for whom the carpet was all laid out for them.
Interesting you say that, Trevor. Okay, so Gough came in 72, and Free University was there for about 10 years until Bob Hawke ended it. We should remember a Labor government started it and the Labor government ended it. But that's interesting. There's that kind of in-between generation things, isn't there, Mark?
Yeah, that's right. And you know, you look at the older baby boomers, and they actually paved a lot more of the way here. And perhaps look at the younger baby boomers, the beatniks, I think they used to call them. You know, rock and roll was coming around, and they were a bit more rebellious against authority. And those older baby boomers sort of don't appreciate that approach as much. The older boomers, remember, were very responsible, very conservative, were shaped by parents who really had suffered through the war and many had
depression as well.
Exactly right. And so that shaped the formative years of those older baby boomers who went on and followed in their footsteps, compared to the younger ones who really saw a change in generational attitude and push back on those traditional structures.
Okay. We've got Laurie. Good morning, Laurie.
Oh, hi. I'm 75 at the moment now.
Yes.
And for my early, early years, we were on a dairy farm. And there was only mum and the three kids, and we had to work hard because we had to help with the dairy, and it didn't matter what your age was, you had to do that. And I think one of the things we learned was that you had to work if you wanted to do something. And, you know, I sort of look at the idea of price of housing and that now.
Yeah.
And, yes, it is expensive. But I went to work at 14, and my weekly wage was £3, which was $6.
Terrible.
And, you know, and that was the way it, that was just the way it was. And I actually worked in a sawmill. So it wasn't sort of like you had the opportunity of doing that or anything else. And even when I got married, if you didn't have a job, you still could get an income because there was no, you know, we weren't entitled to any money from the government. And when we got child endowment, we thought it was great.
Yes.
What was it, 50 cents? 50 cents a fortnight. And we thought it was great.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that in my older years, and I was one of those lucky ones who went to uni free as a mature adult. I had four kids, but I still went and just got into that mood.
Yep.
And I actually worked with families and children. I think one of the things that we did do, because we were so brought up in such strict homes and school and stuff like that, we were just that little bit freer with what we did for our kids, like, you know, let them go a little bit. But I think the next generation that came, they still thought that they were hard done by. And I think for a couple of, you know, children born sort of to mums who were sort of 17, 18, 19, around that age.
Yes.
They thought they were hard done by too. So they released some of the discipline of the kids. You know, when I was seven, I went to school and I back answered a teacher.
Ooh.
Now, I got the cane for that.
Yeah.
And do you know what? Boys and girls got the cane fairly regularly.
Yes, I remember getting the strap.
The boys got it on the hands.
Yeah.
But we had this male teacher who used to turn, the girls had to turn their back to the class.
Mm.
He would lift up the back of the skirt and we would get it across the backside.
I don't think anyone thinks that's a good idea.
But it was just the way it was, and nobody whinged about it because that's what it was. So I think in each generation there's sort of bits and pieces that get too free,
yes,
and too hard. And okay. I think getting that middle bit, I think, is sometimes very hard because society itself is changing.
Laurie, thank you. I'll get Mark to comment on all of that. That's a lot to unpack, but thank you very much for that. So The age that people had children, that's one thing, certainly, that Laurie was mentioning, Mark, that you had a lot more people giving birth and getting married, you know, in their late teens and early 20s, and that certainly doesn't happen now, and that changes how somebody is a parent, and the discipline, and also the difference between what was happening in rural Australia and, you know, urban Australia.
Yeah, great summary of some of the issues. That's right. You know, the age from which, well, first people were getting married earlier, there was no cohabitation. You know, today, 4 in 5 couples who marry have lived together prior to marriage. So that's a new phenomenon. It was hardly at all observed for the baby boomers. And of course, children would follow quite closely on from marriage, certainly pre-1961, or more the mid-60s when the pill was widely available and used. So it was a different era. Younger parents, early 20s was the average, in fact, about 21 initially, of women becoming parents. Today it's 31 yeah. is the median age of an Australian woman giving birth. So definitely the parenting years have been pushed back, the marriage years have been pushed back, adolescence has been extended. You know, today the 20-something years yeah. Are almost an extended adolescent age, whereas the baby boomers got on with it pretty earlier. They were, you know, having to manage households. They were buying homes. They had mortgages in their early 20s. So when we look back at that, we think, wow, they did mature quite early. And I guess that's why they you know, now are still active as grandparents, and because their children were the family started a lot younger than we see these days.
All right. Discipline. Did you want to talk about that?
Yeah, well, you know, as you said, I think there's a lot of reforms that we see are good ones, even if, you know, some people bemoan some of the shift, but getting rid of corporal punishment in schools, I think was a fantastic one. And certainly, there was just different standards. I think that's what makes it tricky these days. You know, you've got a lot of older people will say, well, in our day, you know, we had Kraken Eye, we had fireworks, and we'd never hurt us, you know. Times have changed, the era has changed, the environmental approach has changed, our view of safety and risk has changed, and child protection issues have changed. And some of those stories that we hear of, you know, the girls getting a strap up the front of the class and make our hair rise on the back of our neck as to how it was ever acceptable. But it was a different era, and it is hard when we, I guess, take today's standards and knowledge and observation and apply that on a prior era. Because they were different times, and people, you know, got by and adapted back then to what was the norm.
Let's talk to Mark in Butterham. G'day, Mark.
Good morning. Hello, boys. How are you?
Boys.
Yeah, well, we're all Burma boys.
I'm not a Burma, but anyway.
Well, you can pretend to be one if you want, you know. But I was born in 1953, and I can clearly remember my mum crying, and I asked her what was wrong going to school, and she said John F. Kennedy had been shot. And then I saw the Beatles when I was 9 in Sydney.
You actually went to the concert?
My dad, a straight up and down Australian Navy man, bought me a ticket to see and walked me down there. And I couldn't hear him because chicks were yelling too much. But I saw him. And then we get to 69 and the Christian Brothers took us to the hall at school and showed us the man walking on the moon in black and white. Mm-hmm. And that same year, 69, we had Woodstock movie on in Sydney. We had 2001, A Space Odyssey, on in Sydney, and popular culture just started kicking off. It was Bob Dylan, the protest movement was still going, Four Dead in Ohio.
It was just turbulent. Yes, that's a very good point, Mark. Thanks, mate. I really appreciate that. What incredible memories.
Mm.
Mark McCrindle's our guest. Okay, so just taking a little bit on from what Mark was saying there in Butterham, that the boomers created modern Australian entertainment, popular culture. They revolutionised theatre in Australia, which was moribund. I mean, we did not have an Australian theatre. We mostly produced overseas productions. The Australian film industry began under the boomers. Australia's music industry was revolutionised in the 1970s as well. Groups like Skyhooks and Daddy Cool gave us an Australian voice. Again, younger people take it for granted. They think that was always the case. Boomers gave us Double J, which became Triple J as well. And that's such an important part of Australian life. That those things, the theatre, film, music, dance as well with the Australian Ballet and the Sydney Dance Company, that was created for us by the boomers.
That's true. You know, the whole modern art movement, compared to what was pretty traditional going before them, was of their time. And of course, the television industry, with television coming in 1956. So by the 1960s, you had a whole new industry, local production of TV, and it was the baby boomers that stepped up as young people into that new era. So, you know, the perfect circumstances for them, as they were young, inheriting these and shaping these new sectors of arts and culture, can't be overstated. Phenomenal. And the impacts they had, of course, through that in their formative years was very great. So, you know, they have left a massive legacy in Australia across the cultural landscape. And, you know, as Mark was sharing, just those history points, you know, what a timeline. I mean, yes. The world was changing. These were September 11 type events, you know, world-shaking events, and they were one after the other. Mm-hmm. And so it was a phenomenal time, and it had a big impact, and it was, for many of them, I guess almost, you know, intoxicating, that they were part of a generation that was seeing the world change before their eyes. They had that front row seat, and they were indeed hands-on, able to shape some of this. So quite heady times for them at such a young age.
Let's talk to Glenys now. Hello, Glenys.
Hello, Rod. Rod, I just want to talk about the fact that I was a female born in 1947.
Yep.
I didn't have the opportunity to go to university. I mean, there was very few universities. That's, you had right. to win a Commonwealth scholarship to go to university. Mm-hmm. So as a female, if I wanted a profession that was a teacher, a nurse, you worked in a shop or an office,
yeah.
The opportunities for women were very limited. I couldn't go to a bank and get a loan. I couldn't buy a car without either a husband or a parent signing for it. And, you know, I think the young people today don't understand about the revolution that we yes. had in the 60s, because we were very disadvantaged as a female. I mean, we just didn't have the opportunities that the young people have now. Think of a career. Well, I mean, they have the choice of so many opportunities.
They do. And I'll say this, though, Glenys, those that graduate from university, they might have a $50,000 hex debt. Now, people wonder why they can't True. Afford a house. Maybe it's because the federal government has lumbered them with a massive debt that they have to pay off before they can even think of saving for a mortgage.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Or a deposit.
But they have had some opportunities.
Yes.
We didn't even have the opportunity in the first place.
Good point. Thanks very much for that, Glenys. Mark, any thoughts on what Glenys was saying?
Yeah, I think, you know, young women today are living an entirely different life with those opportunities, so much so that actually there are more women at university today than there are men.
Yep.
And more women are moving into those professional roles in certain sectors, even above that of men. In fact, there's now a few sectors where women have totally broken that glass ceiling and earn more. This is Graduate Careers Australia data, earn more than men in certain sectors as they start their careers. So they have seen a total reversal of the case that was the experience of those early baby boomers.
Mark McCrindle is our guest. You're with Rod Quinn on ABC Radio Overnights. Jen says if the younger generation want political changes, then they had better court the baby boomers that agree with them, because without our vote, they won't achieve any substantial changes. Hillary says, attacking boomers, which we are not doing, by the way, plays right into the hands of the right-wing anti-social security net, unemployment, underpayment, anti-unions, globalisation cartel that is eroding many lives. We benefit from the Hawke, Whitlam, Keating legacies. I think you can throw Fraser in there as well, by the way. And liberals never stop trying to destroy those, says Hillary. What do you make of what Hillary has to say?
Well, you know, you're always going to get people that I guess are very defensive of their generation. It's sometimes called generational preening, you know, where we sort of try to show that our generation had it just perfectly. But look, every generation has some great strengths and achieved great things, and also perhaps had some areas where there were some weaknesses, or where they didn't perhaps pave the way as much as they should have. And I think that's just the nature of these discussions of history, time, and generations, is that we've got to appreciate the benefits of each generation,
okay.
and also acknowledge some of the weaknesses.
Wayne from Oakley says, as a baby boomer, I can recall being brought up abiding by the law. In those days, there was no need to lock your doors. We knew everyone in the street. We were safe to walk the streets to school and anywhere. Our elderly were respected. Grandparents weren't bashed and robbed like today. What has happened to society? I mean, it's a good point that Wayne makes, but of course, what we are hearing from the Me Too movement is that maybe sexual harassment went on for a long time, and people are standing up against that now. It wasn't all rosy when it came to crime, for example. I mean, most crime rates continue to go down. It was always much worse in the past.
Well, that's right. And you know, we just shine a light into the dark corners of society these days a lot more in terms of the reporting regimes, in terms of, therefore, our awareness of things like child abuse or domestic violence. And so it's not to say it never went on. It's just that it didn't get focused on, and there wasn't the responses. And also, you know, while there were good times in the past, you also got a lot of young people who slipped through the cracks. You know, today, the awareness of children maybe that have autism or mental health issues, the awareness of those who maybe aren't learning that traditional way and so are picked up on it by the system and able to be educated or given up other opportunities is a great thing. And it wasn't seen as much back then. And kids had to, you know, we say they failed school, but it was more that school failed them in big numbers and they left early and really drifted. So, you know, there's a lot of benefits that have come from our more sophisticated times.
We've seen with various royal commissions that things were not all rosy back in the old days. Jennifer, good morning.
Hi.
You want to mention conscription?
Well, conscription's only part of it. You know, we were very lucky to be born in Australia, and most of us were lucky to have enough to eat and freedom and some chance of an education and so forth. But you should remember that we baby boomers often had very damaged parents.
Yes.
Many of the people I went to university with were the children of Holocaust survivors. And they had big shoes to fill. And people I went to school and university with who had fathers who had perhaps been working on the railway in Burma. I remember one girl, when I went to her house, her father just sat by the fire with a blanket over his legs. He was barely a person. He was barely alive. He was so traumatized.
Well, that is a very good point, Jennifer. And I'll just get Bob to make a further comment, and we'll get Mark to talk about that. Bob, good morning.
G'day, fellas. Look, that just leads in perfectly to mine. My dad was a knockabout soldier, fighting soldier from the Second World War, and Mum always helped him and looked after him, but he was a tough man, and him and Mum gave me everything. I was born in 55, and as soon as I finished year 10, I went out to a trade. There was, say, six classes. Four classes would be tradesmen, and the other two would go on to uni and be school teachers or accountants. But I played a lot of sport. I played rugby, which I loved, and I was a professional boxer. But Dad was like a lot of other fellas. We played pretty tough sport because I think they came from that era of soldiery, and there was that toughness. And somewhere later on, people go, oh, I don't want my kids knocked about. And I agree with them 100%. I didn't teach my boy how to box because I didn't want him knocked about. But, yeah, my parents gave me all they could, and I'm giving my kids all I could. Now, I think it's just passing on the help that you can give your own, personally.
Appreciate that, Bob. Mark, I mean, that's a really good point made by both of our callers. But, of course, the boomers, they invented kind of the generation gap. I mean, they really broke away from their parents, didn't they? The generation that came before them was markedly different to the boomer generation.
That's right. And by the time they were coming of age, particularly the younger boomers, they were ready for a change and shook up the system, the institutions in a massive way. But, you know, the point made there in both those calls about the impact of the war, I think we do sometimes overlook. You know, there was no bigger event in the 20th century, no greater tragedy, of course, than World War II. And even the very youngest baby boomers were born just 19 years after the end of that great global conflagration. And you know, we're now almost 19 years from September 11, and it still looms large in our social discussions and memories. So they were, even the very youngest, were growing up under that shadow and under parents that had experienced it, of course, firsthand, many, as we heard, fought in it.
Yeah, I think the boomers grew up under the shadow of the Cold War, which was this menacing thing, far more menacing perhaps than World War II was for them. I think the abandonment of national service was really important. A whole generation of children, or men in particular, didn't have to worry about being called up to go off for national service, and that kind of changed their expectation to the world. Let's talk to Gillian. Good morning, Gillian.
Good morning, Rod and Mark. I have a point which is about the importance of exposure, and we're not talking Facebook and Instagram, proper exposure. My eldest daughter is going to graduate from high school in about 6 hours.
Congratulations.
And yes, to her, fantastic. And today, my mum has come down from Toowoomba to see her for her formal, her graduation and all that sort of stuff. And my mum's in her mid-70s. I'm 48. And my neighbours popped in today and they're in their 60s, mid-60s.
Oh, yeah.
So we've got a 14-year-old, 17-year-old, 70. You know, we've got these
so
different
you've got a whole lot
groups.
Of generations, yep.
Yeah, yeah, and all women, all talking over each other, as we do. And some different topics came up. And one of the things that my 14-year-old said when we were talking about mum putting recycle out and complaining about different methods, she said, "Oh, Granny, oh, you sound like a boomer," but it was a compliment, and so that was really interesting because I've followed the media and seen that calling someone a boomer is dismissive, but because they're exposed and because they're integrated and they actually see these people and have conversations with these people, my 14-year-old called the whole of us, she called herself, "I sound like a boomer." And I thought that was pretty cool.
Okay, thanks very much for that, Gillian. That's young people for you, isn't it? Hello, Cole.
Yeah, g'day, Trev.
It's Rod here, but anyway, go on, Cole. You lived through the era.
Yeah, I got through, born in 1947, and I had two other older brothers and sisters, and they were sort of in another era from me. So when the 60s came through, you know, they were married and all that sort of stuff, and I was still running around sort of wild. But I wasn't that wild, but I just got through it all, you know, the cuts at school and all that sort of stuff, bullying and all sorts of stuff. But I want to say to you, Rod, I don't know if you ever come across the videos they brought out in 1966.
No.
Called Life in Australia, and it's got every state. Life in Melbourne, 1966.
Sounds good.
Sydney. Just Google it. It's pretty interesting.
Okay.
It takes you back, yeah.
All right, no worries. Thanks very much for that. Cole Beryl, good morning.
Oh, hello, Rod. In the baby boomers, well, I think my children are, they're in their 50s. But anyway, the children then had more respect for their elders, and there was more freedom. They could, and less crime. They could walk to school, and you know, and walk, play out the street.
Yeah, they can't do that now.
No. Oh, they've got to be driven, and you've got to look after them, you know, more closely. But the mothers were encouraged to stay home and look after their children when they had their babies. And now they're expected to go out to work, and the parents want...
Well, maybe they want to go to work, Beryl.
and they want everything straight away. Oh, whereas, whereas the younger one, the young ones, and myself, well, I'm a lot of, we had to save for things. We didn't go out to work. We saved and got things gradually. You know, okay. We worked hard and
yep.
stayed home and looked after our children and spent time with them. Now they, well, Stephen, my son, he saw this mother give her young boy, I forget how old, about 12, 13, 14, $50, and said, here, you go downtown. I don't want to, something like, you know. And they just don't want to spend time with their children. Whereas, you know, and the younger right. ones.
Okay, Beryl, look, we're running out of time, I'm afraid, but Mark, I would love to get you to comment on that. So, just on women, for example, working. They're forced to go out to work. I mean, a lot of women, I mean, there was a terrible time in the suburbs of Australia in the 50s where women couldn't work or didn't work. They stayed home to look after the children, which is fine if that's their choice, but it was a very lonely life in some of those suburbs.
It was, and they were, you know, dormitory suburbs back then where they were very quiet in the day. Everyone would have to commute to the city and the suburbs would lie there, you know, quite quiet until the workers came back. Quite different today with the mobility that we have, the public transport, the walkable communities. You know, there were options. You didn't just have to have a detached home. You had to have a detached home then, not the options that people have today, and the whole social life was quite different. So, you know, a lot of change that we've seen. I mean, a big one that I think we haven't discussed is even when they were young, the decimal currency coming in. Yes. You know, that transformed literally how we spend and what we carry in our wallets. So, you know, a lot of these reforms, you know, transforming society in the early formative years.
Okay, we've got one last call, which is Bob. Quickly, sorry about this, Bob. Good morning.
Sorry, Rod. Something that seems to have not had a lot of emphasis is the Vietnam War.
We talk about it a fair bit.
Yeah, but the bit that got me, and I'm a veteran of it, we got conscripted
yep.
to go to war with 520-odd people that they died.
Yes.
Now, you had no choice, you know. You could, and that's what really got hold of me.
Okay.
It wrecked a lot of guys' careers.
Yes.
I've just come out of a 5-year apprenticeship and done all right in it, and I had plans. And then it got stuffed by this National Service military call-up and a trip away. Now, that, and I still am paying for it. I'm on a DVA pension, and I still, lots of things are wrong.
Yeah, well, but, I hate to say it. I'm terribly sorry. But
yeah, that's all right, but we need to remember that.
Okay, and that's a good point. But, of course, Mark, we need to remember the generation before that. They had no say. They all went off to the war as well. There's only a few people, comparatively, went to the Vietnam War.
Well, that's true. I guess a big difference was that the Vietnam War split the nation. It didn't have the unity of World War One, and you ended up with some who went to war and suffered, and others were the hippies and, you know, the Woodstock generation, as it were, even here in Australia. And it did create a bit of a split in the generation and some resentment amongst peers that we haven't seen since then.
Yeah. Anne from the Gong, and Cheryl, I'm sorry, you've written two very long and very interesting texts, which I sadly don't have time to read out now, but I will say to Mark McCrindle, this is such an interesting topic. I think we may revisit it later on, and I thank you very, very much for your time this morning.
Thank you very welcome, Rob. Thanks so much.
That is Mark McCrindle, the social researcher and founder of McCrindle Research. And thanks to all of our callers. And there's so much we didn't get to, but I hope we get the chance to do it again. And that was another podcast from ABC Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. Thanks for listening.